Hi, folks. Can we realistically view the Compromise of 1850 as the beginning of the Civil War? Well, I think so. On March 4, 1850, while gravely ill, South Carolina Senator John C. Calhoun listened while his own speech against what he called Northern aggression was read to the Senate. It set off a bitter debate. And after the debate over five different bills, all known as the Compromise of 1850, only one thing was clear. Slavery was the hottest political topic in the land. This bitter road to compromise centered around political balance between free and slave states in the U.S. Senate. Now, we need to look at background to understand this. From 1800 to 1850, most politicians had successfully avoided the arguments over slavery despite an America that was drastically changing. For example, the American population increased 400% in those years. U.S. land had boomed with the Louisiana Purchase and the war with Mexico. Throughout much of this growth, the debate over slavery was tied directly to the new territories and gradually intensified. Yet there's a critical difference here. Whenever slavery raised its political head, compromise came. In other words, the politicians did not want to talk about slavery. From 1820 to 1850, a number of such compromises took place. For example, the Compromise of 1820 was just a simple balancing act between Maine as a free state and Missouri as a slave state. In 1836, another compromise called the Gag Rule prohibited questions of slavery from coming to the floor of Congress. Then, in the 1840s, the rise of abolition in the North challenged slavery, but only in one section of the country. And then, a complex series of new crises developed in 1848, and events moved very, very swiftly. Now let's look at these. First, the vast new territory gained from the war with Mexico prompted many to debate where and when slavery would be extended west. Southerners openly hoped for more slave states to enter the Union. The 1849 gold strikes then created a population boom in California, and the state quickly petitioned Congress to become a state which prohibited slavery. Southern congressmen had already lost the slave versus free state balance in the House of Representatives, and they felt they could not give up that balance in the Senate. If California was admitted free, then the rules of the Compromise of 1820 would be overturned, and the balance of slave and free state Senate votes in the nation's Senate would then favor anti-slavery sentiments. Another western area, Texas, was also a part of the crisis. After 10 years as an independent state, Texas was bankrupt and boldly claimed that its territory extended through most of present-day New Mexico. Now, Texas was ready to enter the Union, but Texas also allowed slavery. Allowing Texas in would assure slavery not only in Texas, but in the new territory which Texas claimed from Mexico, soon to be called New Mexico Territory. If Texas had her claims validated, then slave states had an upper hand. The last element in the crisis of 1850 focused on the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Laws prohibited the importation and sale of African slaves, but no statutes outlawed the sale of slave children and the resale of slaves already in captivity. Now, by geographic fate, the nation's capital became the country's largest slave market by 1850. The closeness of such a large slave trade, literally in the sight of Congress, which was hotly debating slavery at the time, only served to enrage the radicals on both sides. So it was within this environment that Henry Clay of Kentucky, Daniel Webster of Massachusetts, John C. Calhoun of South Carolina, and later Stephen Douglas of Illinois, worked to produce a series of bills. The bills collectively became the Compromise of 1850. Now, the first four compromises are fairly simple. First, we would pay Texas $10 million to help reduce the Texas debt and release claim to New Mexico. Second, we would allow California to enter the Union as a free state. Next, we would organize four new territories, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, and Utah, all without mention of slavery. Then, we would abolish all slave trade inside Washington, D.C., although slavery itself was still permitted. The new territories are something we should examine in detail. The four new territories would be allowed to decide later if they would be slave or free. This part of the law only stiffened debate. Southern politicians claimed that they were not getting enough out of the whole bill, especially since they knew slavery was unlikely to spread to the deserts of the far west. So, we come to the last bit of the compromise. This one said that we will pass a bill known as the Fugitive Slave Law. Frankly, this was to placate Southerners, and Congress passed an extensive act aimed at allowing Southerners to regain their property by searching even free states and territories, all with the help of the federal government. Let's look at the Fugitive Slave Law in detail. For example, it created commissioners reporting to federal circuit courts who were supposed to track down escaped slaves and return them to Southern owners. Commissioners had the express powers to remove any escaped slave from any state or any territory. So the question became, would we be a nation of slave catchers? Marshals could be fined $1,000 if they refused to help catch escaped slaves. The act directly urged all good citizens to aid in the capture of escaped slaves. Citizens obstructing the act could even be fined $1,000 and serve 6 months in jail. The law even paid a $10 fee to those who properly identified the escapees. We then went through 9 months of debate. The bills contained a little bit of something for everyone, and everyone could find something to hate in at least one of the bills. Debate raged from January to July. Then President Taylor, who had not supported the compromise, died. The new president finally helped pass the laws in September 1850. We can best visualize these bills on the map of the United States at the time. You see here, California enters the nation as a free state. Then Utah and New Mexico territories were organized without restricting slavery, thus allowing voters to decide if the new states would be slave or free. The slave states' borders and territories were reaffirmed, including the border of Texas. The trading of slaves inside Washington, D.C. was ended, but the right to own slaves in the nation's capital was reaffirmed. The Fugitive Slave Law was passed, allowing escaped slaves to be returned from free territory. The reactions to these bills were immediate. For example, reactions to the Fugitive Slave Law even became violent. Northerners were outraged and organized open resistance. Free blacks feared they would be enslaved, and some even fled to Canada. Abolitionists rallied support against the act. Under this law, the oaths of any two villains, the captor and the claimant, are sufficient to confine a free man to slavery for life. A direct quote from Frederick Douglass, seemed to sum up sentiments in the North. Nearly everyone hated some part of the bills that became the Compromise of 1850. While the bills avoided war, they solved none of the nation's problems.